This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Tuesday edition of Invest Talk. It's December 2nd. We're already into December, the one last month of the year before, you know, we have the tax time coming up next year. I always think about the tax time this at the last month or two, and what we can do to reduce taxes for next year. This is Invest Talk. It's on the radio. We're streaming live on InvestTalk.com from 4 to 5 Pacific Time. And, of course, our podcast listeners download our show worldwide. Kind of nice to have those guys with us. If you're looking for some rational thinking and the application of proven investing techniques, then we're here for you. We really don't have any get-rich-quick formulas to promote. I don't do that. I never do that. I've never been able to get rich quick myself. I got rich slowly. You can do it slowly, but get rich quick just doesn't work. And Invest Talk is here to be a friend of the average investor, to help make better investing decisions. You're never going to be perfect. No one is perfect. You're never going to make a perfect decision on everything you buy or sell. I wish it was true, but it's not going to happen. But you can make better general decisions. Too many people make a decision based on emotion. You don't have to do that. So I hope you'll think of this program as a means to get the answers you need to help make those better decisions on stocks and bonds and then the other money choices that you might have. Now, there's no need to go it alone. There are many great free resources out there. I know Justin talked about some of them yesterday. We have a good resource for information right there on InvestTalk.com, our website, and that's our recommended books section. Books that we think should be in your library and that you should read them. You can just scroll down towards the bottom of the homepage on InvestTalk.com. You'll see the book section there. And we have a list of classic books like Jesse Livermore. You ever heard of him? The world's greatest stock trader. He died more than 50 years ago, half a century. But he's also still considered today's top traders today feel that he's the greatest trader that ever lived. There's also Peter Lynch, Beating the Street. That's a great book, a beginner book. He's a legendary money manager, explains his strategies. Very good book. There's Richard Foster's Creative Destruction, my absolute favorite book, by the way, Creative Destruction. And my second favorite book, believe it or not, is Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds by Charles McKay. Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. I even like the title. I think it's a cool title. I like the title Creative Destruction, too. Now, these are classics. You got to read these books. You can also read Above Average Investing for the Average Investor. That's my book. It's on that list. Of course, I put my book on. It's for beginners, too. It's really, I think, very helpful. So, I talk about, what moves prices, what happens in economics, how to read some basic charts. So, and if you want to order any of these books, you can. You can do it right there, shipped to you from Amazon. Now, I've done enough talking for now. It's time for you to get on the show. It's your show. You drive the topic. Let's move on. Let's answer a 24-hour lesson line question. This one came in after last program, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. This is Bruce from New York. I listen to your show every day via podcast. I have a question regarding long-term care insurance, a topic you discussed within the last 2 weeks and is of current interest to me right now. California and New York, among other states, offer partnership policies that protect a person with a decent amount of assets, and that Medicaid will kick in after the long-term care policy benefits are exhausted. This way, you don't have to spend down your assets to obtain Medicare benefits. My mom had to deplete her assets before Medicaid kicked in to cover her medical expenses. So I am confused between the theory of buying insurance for a potential need versus the low probability of ever using the insurance, specifically when it comes to these partnership things. Perhaps you can discuss this, since I'm currently stuck in making a decision if a partnership policy is worth it for me. Thanks. Great show. Bye.
Well, for those people who don't know what they are, long-term care insurance is supposed to pay benefits to you. Well, that's not supposed to. It pays benefits to you if you or whoever the beneficiary is, has a policy and needs to be taken care of, the illness or old, and primarily is when you're really old and you have a debilitating illness and you had to go into a home. But there are benefits to keep you at your own home, and they'll help pay, but that's not very good. Anyways, I don't care for that policy at all. I never liked it. I've always advocated saving your money during your life, put money aside for long-term care, and chances are good you won't need it. Chances are very high that you won't be using it. And when you do use it, the benefits are not enough to cover all those years of insurance you bought it for, and you won't be able to get it very good coverage for a decent price when you're old. They don't want to sell it to you when you're old because you know you're closer to maybe using it. Insurance companies figure out how much money to charge. I am not a big fan of long-term care. I'm not, have never been, but that's my personal opinion. And I've had personal experience with some of them, but, you know, it's just not something that I care for. So what are weighing the benefits versus the costs? I think that's a personal thing everybody has to think about, because it's just, for me, it's just not worth it. With hyper-diversified portfolios, investors can be lulled into a false sense of security. Four ways diversification can hurt your portfolio. My old partner, Jerry Klein, my partner, he used to call it diversification. Diversification, not diversification. To being too diverse. We're going to talk about that as one of the talking points today. Also, I want to talk, is falling oil prices, everybody's writing about it, everybody sees it, everybody's talking about oil prices collapsing, blah, 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 blah. Is that a bullish or a bearish sign for the stock market? I'm going to talk about that. I looked it up. Kind of interesting, the stats. A healthy U.S. economy may have a sting in the tail. Morgan Stanley wrote an opinion piece, and I find it very interesting. The thing that I really want to talk about is the reduction of real GDP by various countries worldwide and global reduction of GDP for 2015. But there's one place where the GDP, according to Morgan Stanley, one country where it's going to go up next year. Kind of interesting. And another piece on oil. OPEC is wrong to think it can outlast U.S. on oil prices. This is in MarketWatch.com. OPEC is wrong to think it can outlast U.S. on oil prices. Now, OPEC, you know, the, what is it, 12-member nation organization of oil producers, did not change their oil production numbers. So, and that caused oil prices to fall even more. And the thinking is that maybe Saudi Arabia and the other countries think that, well, gee, we'll just outlast the other producers like the United States. And the lower the prices, they'll stop drilling, and then prices will float back up. Well, this piece thinks that's not a very good strategy, if that's their strategy. And it's not going to work. That's what they think. Kind of interesting points that they make, and I want to share them with you. But let's look at the market. What happened today? Well, the market had a nice rebound day today, 101 points up on the Dow, 28 points on the NASDAQ, and 13 points on the S&P 500. Do you think all the indexes are up for the year now? Because they've been rallying. Well, you'd kind of be wrong. Did you look at the Russell 2000? Have you looked at the Russell 2000? Yesterday it was down for the year. Today it popped up for the year. But you can't say anything but other than it's really flat. Really flat. Now, why is that? Russell 2000, that's the 2,000 small cap stocks. And the reason why I bring this up, and I brought it up many times, a healthy bull market always is led by small companies, small cap stock companies. Not this one. Not this year. Why? It's always a question of why, and that why is very hard to answer. Not sure why. I got some theories, but no one really knows. But it is very interesting and very disturbing. I just don't think it's not normal. It's not right. And if someone comes out and says, well, it's different this time because of X, Y, Z, that for sure tells me something's really wrong. Because it's never different. You know, I heard that argument during the dot-com years, 1998, 99. Well, it's different this time because the dot-coms, they don't have to have earnings because it's different. Because it's a new way of doing things, a new way of doing business. So it's different. They don't have to have sales and earnings. They only have to attract eyeballs. Now, that might sound funny now, right now, but back then, that was the hue and cry by analysts and everybody else in the world where the stock market kept going up and it was different because it was a new paradigm of way of doing business. And I don't really care what you say or anybody else says. If you don't make money, stock prices cannot keep going up. Now, we are making money in the stock market. The corporations are doing fine here in the United States. So I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying that the term is different this time. Every time I hear it, my little red flag really starts to vibrate, waving in the air. Really vibrates. It's not different. So we're here to answer your questions and perhaps bring up some unexpected topics that give you a little more perspective on investing. 888-99-CHARTER is our number. You can reach us right now with your money topic on Invest Talk.
New year with a freshly positioned portfolio. Maybe Steve can give you some ideas. Schedule a portfolio review at one of our California offices or from anywhere on Skype. And to sign up, just go to investtalk.com and click on schedule a meeting.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So let's talk about diversification. Four reasons diversification could hurt your portfolio. Number one, we have to define diversifications. And what happens after you get too many? And my old partner, as I said, called it diversification. The benefits of diversification quickly diminish when you add more than about 30 stocks to your portfolio, 30 holdings. It just starts to deteriorate. You start to become the entire market. You can't do better than the market ever because you are the market. So, number two, over-diversification guarantees performance, average performance at best. And there's two kinds of risk when you talk about diversification or non-diversification. There is no matter what stocks you own, 30 or 300, it doesn't matter. If the market is going down, you're going to go down with it. If you own those companies, you're going to go down with it. Now, that is the market risk, but there's also company specific risk, and this is where you theoretically can outperform if you buy the good solid companies that have rising earnings and rising growth. And that's where you can shine when the market moves. You have to add superior assets to your portfolio, not just so-so, not speculative ones, not ones you're not sure if they're going to make money or grow. So, and if you are going to diversify, you got to understand there has to be a good mix. It has to be a mix of assets that are not necessarily correlated with each other. That's what diversification is all about, non-correlated assets. Managing the company 401k plan can be a big burden for employers. If you'd like to explore a way to lighten your load, maybe talk to us. Go to investtalk.com, click on the Contact Justin, and write in 401k. We have a pack of information to send you. This is Invest Talk.
Three times a week, Steve expresses his views on today's market and surrounding economic facts of life, and you can check out his market commentary when you visit investtalk.com next time. And thanks again for subscribing to our podcast.
Now, your calls are the lifeblood of our conversation on Invest Talk. 888-99-CHARTER is how you reach me. Whenever you have a money question or comment, you can do it anytime. Let's check out the listener line.
Hi, this is John from Walnut Creek. I listen to you on podcasts, and I love your show. I just have a question about onshore versus offshore oil drillers. I can't help but notice these offshore oil drillers, Transocean, and so Noble, Diamond Offshore, they're constantly going down in stock price day after day after day. It's my understanding that it's cheaper to drill for oil on land than it is over water. So would we expect these offshore drillers to keep going down and down since we have such an abundance of oil on land? Just thinking, trying to think things out in terms of being a contrarian investor and trying to buy some of these companies when they're really low like they are right now, but they just keep going down. So I'm just curious, and I know that the price point is about $60 for a barrel of oil as a break-even point for onshore drillers. Is there a break-even point for offshore drillers? I was just curious to know your answer. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Well, answer is yes, it is cheaper to drill for oil on land than it is offshore, and for obvious reasons. So when oil prices fall, your offshore drilling rigs, the amount that they can get for drilling is much less because barge producers like ExxonMobil and so on, they'll slow down their production. They don't want to spend a lot of money on oil when they finally get it out. They're not making any money on a barrel of oil they're pumping. So yeah, it is more expensive in the ocean than it is on land. Now, to offset that, to make that expense more equal, you got to figure fracking is more costly than just normal oil drilling, and that's where the big production is coming from, is fracking, increase in production of oil. So therefore, what's that break-even point? What is the? It differs. It's never the same. I'm going to talk about that a little bit further, but I can tell you that Saudi Arabia's cost to produce a barrel of oil is $2 per barrel. I mean, you can't get, let me see, make sure that's right. I was reading this in the article, so I'm not making this stuff up, but it's very, very low. Very, very low. So that's why, one of the reasons why they think they can push the oil prices down and not worry about it too much. But there's something that gets in the way of that thinking. We're going to talk about that. So yeah, Transocean and those kind of guys, they've been really beaten up, and they've gotten beaten up even more in recent week or two. I mean, pretty heavy. For all year, they've been going down. There was a part of the middle of the year, it looks like they were going to recover. It looks like they were going to find it, and then they rolled over by about in July and steadily gone down ever since. So you got to be, are they cheap enough to buy? Well, Transocean is now $19 a share, and this year they're going to make $4.72 a share. So from that point of view, you say, hey, that's really, really, really inexpensive. What, that 4 PE or something? But next year they're going to make $2.68. So they're going to cut in half their earnings. So remember, you base your value of the company on next year's earnings. And that's what? More like 8 or 9 P's. Still pretty cheap. But if oil prices keep going down, that's not going to help them. Not. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Since we're talking about falling oil prices, is the falling oil prices bearish or bullish for the overall market going forward? And there's really two answers to this. Not that I'm trying to be confusing, but it depends. If they fall slowly, slowly falling oil prices historically has been very bullish for the market. Collapsing oil prices have been bearish. Historically, collapsing oil prices are bearish for the oil market. Think about it this way. There's a bunch of oil states out there, right? Texas, Oklahoma, North Dakota, a bunch of. What happens when oil prices go down? Their revenue goes down. What happens when the revenue goes down? They raise taxes. What happens when you raise taxes? You slow down the economy. If oil prices collapse, all those fracking oil producers and all the chain of producing that oil, those companies have purchased large chunks of junk bonds. They have sold large chunks of junk bonds to finance all this. If oil prices keep going, that debt is going to cause a lot of defaults. That's very bullish. I mean, very bearish for the market. Because if they start defaulting, and you can see junk bonds. Look at JNK, which is ETF junk bonds. You can see it's not doing very well. And finally, if oil prices fall, shouldn't small caps be leading the market if they're indicating that that's going to be beneficial for the old economy? And small caps are not. Something's not right with the picture. I just don't know what it is. I'm not smart enough to know what that is. Maybe are you going to say it's different this time? It's never different. We try to make investment worth your while each day. InvestTalk is always here for you. We want your input. Let's hear from you before the hour is up. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. I'm here to answer any money questions you might have. 888-99-CHART. Chart 888-992-4278. Let's talk to James in Sonoma. How are you doing, James?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. I have a couple questions here on an investment. Qualcomm is a tech stock, and of course, Chevron being an oil stock.
Right.
I'm a dividend guy. I've talked to you before. I tend to buy on pullbacks. Now, admittedly, they both went up today quite a bit, but. If you had to make an investment, if you were, you're making an investment today, would you go with the tech stock or would you go with the oil stock? And now Chevron, of course, has a nice, juicy, almost 4% dividend, and Qualcomm has a lot less dividend, but it increases by a lot more, and it has no debt. So I'm just interested in your comments on which sector you'd go in.
Well, both of them are large blue-chip stocks, which are very strong and healthy companies. I like Chevron, and I like Qualcomm. At this point, let me take a look at Chevron's chart. Gee, where's jumping jaws fat? Both of them are at support, which I kind of like. I think at this point, I'm going to go with Qualcomm versus Chevron at this point. Doesn't mean I hate oil stocks. I just want to see oil prices stop falling before I jump into them. And I haven't seen that yet. Mm-hmm. When it stops falling, I think they're going to get a great opportunity to buy oil stocks. I really think you do. But not yet. The oil price is still falling. Okay, Jay?
Well, I own both of them already, and I've gone in an initial position more than a year ago, and I bought some in October when they went down, and now I'm looking to buy again because they're going down again. So it'd be my third shot at both of them, and I'm just looking at this and, I love that Chevron dividend, but the other one goes up so much quicker, and I didn't know about the oil. I'm like you. I'm a little squeezy on that oil going down.
Yeah, once it stops going down, we see it start to flatten out. I think the oil stocks are where you're going to want to buy, but not yet. I go with Qualcomm if I was going to do something today.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for the call, James. Appreciate it. 888-99-CHART. I apologize for my hiccups. I don't know. All of a sudden, just started to come on. I'll try to control. 888-992-4278. Morgan Stanley came out with its economic forecast for 2015. And it's U.S., global, Eurozone, U.K., Japan, China, India, Brazil, and Russia. Now, United States, they have that going from the September of this year of 2.8% to December now, and this is for 2015, they're now predicting 2.9. So it's from September to December where they've increased or decreased. Every other country is a decrease. Global from 3.7 to 3.5, and it's from Eurozone 1.2 to 1, and I'm not so sure they're even going to grow 1% next year. Okay, maybe. UK 2.7 to 2.5. Japan from 0.8% to 0.6%. China 7.1% to 7. India from 6.3 to 6.3. So they didn't change on India and they didn't change on Brazil. 0.3% to 0.3%. And of course, Russia, they have them going down strongly from a shrinkage of 0.5% or 0.5%. shrinkage of 0.5% to a shrinkage of 1.7%. So the only place that really is doing anything is the United States. Now, my question to you is, can we keep that up? Can the U.S., in spite of all the other countries falling, can we keep going, increasing? It's going to be tough. By the way, their recommendation where to buy for next year in 2015 is Japan. They like Japan. Now, let's talk to Brendan in Mill Valley. How you doing, Brendan?
Hi, Steve. How you doing?
Well, I have hiccups, but other than that, I'm doing okay.
Well, I was stuck to having more than hiccups. It's on a heavy downtrend, and I'm wondering if it's part of the oil decline or if the company's not too solid anymore.
Company Pacific, what's the symbol of the company?
I believe it's EVEP, EV Energy Partners.
Okay, EZET. Okay, that's not it. Easy Energy? Let me see if I can find it.
No, EP, as in Edward Paul, is the last two.
Okay,
No.
Go ahead.
EVEP. EV Energy Partners.
Yeah. EZ, as in zebra, E-T as in Tom, doesn't come up. Let me try E-Z-E-P as in Paul. E-Z-E-P.
It's Edward Victor, Steve.
Oh, E-V. That's pretty troubling. What do you have? Okay. EVEP?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Come on, get in. There, I got it. EVEP. That was so bad because my machine was telling me wrong. But anyways, EV Energy Partners. Their earnings are going to go up 88 cents this year from losing $1.76 last year, and then it's going to be another $1.85 next year. So why isn't it moving up? It's a master limited partnership engaged in oil and natural gas exploration and development in the Barnett Shale Appalachian Basin. Okay, so that's where they are. Sales and earnings are increasing, and it is all. It's all related, James, to oil prices going down, why this is falling. Now, should it fall? Should it be this low? I mean, the stock is a $27 stock. It's going to make $1.85 next year. If that is true, it's a pretty cheap stop, pretty cheap stock. It pays a very high dividend, and it has not. It issued new shares a year ago, but not since. So, do you own this? Bryn?
I do, and I'm down.
Yeah, okay. It had a big update today after a big down couple of days the last 2 days, so it didn't make up those losses. I mean, it was up 10% today, but it lost, 15-18% in the last 2 days. I think, personally, let me go to a longer chart. On a daily chart, it's really not helping me as far as where it might stop going down. Boy,
well, my main concern or question is, you know, should I hold on or say goodbye?
It fundamentally, it looks sound, okay? Fundamentally, the company looks sound. It does not have a tremendous amount of debt, and that would be my biggest worry. And it's making money. It's going to make money this year and next. So if that's true, and I even if oil prices, they may have already sold, you know how they can sell advance the product they're pumping? They may have already sold their production next year for $70 a barrel, you know, so this fall in oil may not hurt them, you know, who knows? We don't know. I'd have to get into it. Let me put it this way. If it falls below the low of yesterday, because that's the yearly low and that's the low it's been in the last couple of years, if it breaks that low, I think I'd just give up. And what is that low? It was $24.21. So if it closes below $24.21, I think I'd be out. I'd give up. Now, it's at $27.31 because I had a big up day today. So I would use that as my trigger at this point because it looks fundamentally solid.
That's all good news to me. Going to sit and watch it then.
Yeah, it's really tough, Brandon, because oil is going to stop falling, and that's going to be a great buying opportunity for everybody. And, of course, you know what's going to happen. Once everybody's sold out of all their oil positions, that's when it's going to be at the bottom and it'll start to go up. And that's when you want to be in them, and you've just sold out of them. So and it's hard to know where that is. It really is hard. Brandon, thanks for the call. Let's go to Sal of Menlo Park. How you doing, Sal?
Doing well, thanks. How was your Thanksgiving? Good?
It was very good. We had a small group of about 27, 28 people.
Oh, that's pretty small, yeah.
Yeah. Well, for us it is. I have 43 nieces and nephews, so, yeah. It's small.
Well, anyway, I was calling to ask to see what do you think of TE Connectivity. I work there, and I probably can get discounted stock options.
I love that discounted stock options thing. I think that's great. Let me ask you a question, Sal. When you get the discounted stocks, do you have to hold on to them for a length?
3 years.
Oh, see, okay. So that's the only bad part of that. You know? So,
yeah.
Because you got to look out 3 years.
It's free, right?
Yeah. This is a TE Connectivity, and I'm talking about TE, the letter T and the E. TE Connectivity is a Switzerland company. It's a $26 billion company. It's not small. They do $3.5 billion in sales every quarter. You know, so it's not small. And it's going to make $4.22 this year and then $4.66 next year. That's 10% increase. Sales are going up 4 or 5% quarter after quarter. Not bad, not great. So you kind of want to buy when it's cheap. Return on equity is very good at 18%. Cash flow is very strong. They pay a 1.8% dividend. And what's your discount? What do you get a discount, Sal?
10%? 15%. Yeah, as employee. Yeah. What is their PE ratio?
It's 17, which is, you know, the 5-year average is 9 to 18. But based on next year's, let's take a look at next year's earnings at $4.66 and get the number. And that means next year it'll be 14, which is not bad. I mean, the market.
So it's time to jump in. Is it okay to jump in now?
I think it's okay if you get a 15% discount. I mean, if I got a 15% discount on this company, I probably would do it. I mean, looking over the years, it's pretty consistent. It makes money every year, even in the recession. It didn't make as much, but it still made money. So long.
You're getting bonuses, so I can't complain. Yeah, yeah. Right.
Long term, Sal. I think it'll work.
Perfect. Okay. Well,
thanks,
good.
Sal.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It. T E L is the symbol. T E L. The company name is TE Connectivity Limited out of Switzerland. Okay, kind of interesting. Company, big company, and I've never even heard of it. That's really bad. You would think I would hear of every stock, but apparently not. We were talking earlier about the downside of diversification, but one way to add diversification when you need it is by adding some REITs, real estate investment trusts, to your portfolio. And they have some tax advantages as well. A REIT, or real estate investment trust, is a tax designation for a corporate entity investing in real estate. And REITs are required to distribute. This is InvestTalk 101, everybody. If I didn't bring that up already and I jumped right into it, it's InvestTalk 101. REITs are required to distribute 90% of their taxable income into the hands of investors via a dividend. And if they do that, they only get taxed once. The corporation doesn't have to pay corporate income tax. Only you do when you get the dividend. You pay taxes on that money. That's very different than other companies, so that makes it a benefit. A REIT avoids that kind of double taxation thing. One would assume that coming off a depressed real estate environment and with current low borrowing costs, REITs are coming into favor. Maybe it's a good time to be in them. You have to be very careful which ones you want. There are four basic characteristics of REITs. One, they must distribute 90% of their annual taxable income, excluding capital gains, as dividends. Two, the REIT must have 75% of its assets invested in real estate, mortgage loans, shares in other REITs, cash, or government securities. The REIT must derive at least 75% of its gross income from rents, mortgage interests, or gains from sale of real estate, real property. The REIT must have at least 100 shareholders, 100, and must have less than 50% of the outstanding shares contrary any in the hands of five or fewer shareholders. Now, I don't like private REITs. I like public REITs. But utilizing REITs is a good way to expose yourself to the real estate market and give you some diversification in your portfolio. That's InvestTalk 101. For everybody, 888-99. Is there an investment topic you want to talk about, more that you need more information on? Well, you can send me a note. Click on Contact Steve right there at InvestTalk.com. The KPP Premium Newsletter, it comes out every Friday. It's an e-newsletter. It's a quick and easy source of investing information and perspective. Okay, and easy to keep. It's easy to read. It's not something that you have to struggle with. I write it. I try to make it very, very informative, at the same time understandable. So if you can buy it for a month, $9.99 a month. Remember, it comes out every Friday. It gives you a couple stock ideas, an overview of the market and the economy. And you can buy it. You can buy it just 1 month. You don't have to buy a year subscription. You get a discount if you buy it over a year, but you don't have to. Now we're moving into the last segment of the hour. Let's see if we can get your questions answered before the day is done. There's a line open for you. If you can get to it now, I'd appreciate it. 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to our podcast produced 5 days a week, and we thank you for being here. Also, if you like a professional review of your retirement portfolio, even though you may live out of range of our California offices, it can still be done using email, fax, and phone. To begin the process, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Schedule a Meeting heading under Steve's picture, and someone will get right back to you.
888-99-CHART. Now, I'm going to talk about oil again, and I promise I won't harp on it the rest of this week, I promise. But there's some misconceptions out there that I want to try to see if we can clear up. And you know, the reason why this is even talked about is the OPEC countries, a 12-nation organization for petroleum exporting countries, met and declined to cut production. Now, the Secretary General, his last name is Badri, I guess it is. Apparently thinks that they can, and this is referring to the Saudi Arabia oil ministry, NEMI, thinks that they can drive the oil prices down and drive some of the oil producers in the United States out of business, because we're the ones that's increasing dramatically production. Now, there's three big problems with this strategy. One, North America crude isn't as expensive to produce as everybody thinks it is. Two, there's more than you think in the pipeline already. Make it even cheaper. And third, OPEC nations, including Saudi Arabia, have squandered their edge in cheap oil. Saudi Arabia, it costs $2 a barrel to get it out of the ground. Problem is that if they don't get at least $100 a barrel, it's painful for them, because they have so many programs and subsidized oil prices for gasoline prices for their people, and they're using all that money. Many countries are doing it, using all that oil tax money, all that money they're getting from oil, to pay for things. So they're, even though they're getting the oil out of the ground cheap, their budgets are bloated. Now, also, everybody has this assumption that our fracking oil costs, getting a barrel out of the ground, is like $70, $75, when in actuality, a recent survey just last week, it's more like $60. And if you look at North Dakota, the cost per barrel is about $42. And it and out of a out of 188 oil rigs, 72 of them the cost is $30. 27 of them the cost is $29 per barrel. So they could take a quite a bit of pain on the lowering of oil prices, and they'll still be fine. Now there are those who can't take that much pain, obviously. And one other point, I really kind of talk about. You know, as I said, Saudi Arabia is $2 per barrel, and that's fine. But our demand for gasoline has been going down for years, several number of years now in a row. And our demand is going down, and our production is going up, and we're not even talking about the production increases coming out of Canada. I don't think, unless something changes dramatically, oil prices are going to spike up. I don't see how that can happen. I don't think they'll necessarily stay, $60 a barrel. But I think they're going to range, in the $80 range over any length of time that we can foreseeable future. The only thing that could change this is all of a sudden we have huge economic growth. And I just talked to you about Morgan Stanley's prediction about economic growth. And we're still going to have growth, but it's going to be less next year than it is this year. So how's that going to put pressure on oil prices to go up? It doesn't. Can't. I think we're in the catbird seat. I think we find, if we keep producing what we're producing, in 10 years we'll be self-sufficient. We won't be need to import oil. And that's very doable, by the way. Don't think it isn't. It's very doable. We have been producing all this excess oil without any U.S. government help at all. No help from leases on U.S. government land, which is typical that they usually do. This is all on private land, this fracking. None on government land. None. And there's a ton of shale oil on government land. So we have access. We have it. And we're getting much more efficient at getting it out of the ground. Just pointing out. Do you want to go to the next caller? Do we have time? No, that's too bad. I'm sorry, but we just don't have time for the next caller, and we'll get to them. I promise to get to them tomorrow. I got a little verbose. Sorry about that. 888-99-CHART. Why don't you call us or leave a message on our overnight listener line. Leave there any question concerning money out there, and I promise I'll get to it tomorrow. Before we close for the hour, be sure to sign up to be an InvestTalk Insider. It's free. It gives you access to our whole library of InvestTalk webinars. The latest one is ready now. Our comprehensive wealth workshop on retirement preparation is there. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. On behalf of Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial, thanks for listening, and we hope you'll be here for the next InvestTalk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.